At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, it's John Pollock and Waiting Rewind a Raw coming at you tonight from Toronto. Hello, Way.
We are here, as usual.
Another week, another fun night of talk is coming. I have nothing. Way, I'm in a bad mood.
Why?
Today I went to the library to do some work, and as I was packing up to head home, I knocked my mouse off the desk, and it landed on the ground. And first of all, it was annoying because the batteries just, one of them fell out and rolled underneath like the bookshelf. And it's this tiny area. So I have to get all the way down on the ground here in the library. I have to get my pen and reach in to get this battery back because I'm not leaving this battery behind, okay? Leave no battery behind. Pack up my stuff, get back home. And my mouse is now damaged and it just will not work. It fell at such an angle where my computer, it's a wireless mic or a wireless mouse. Mm-hmm. And I can scroll, but the clicker does not. I've tried everything. It will not.
You can scroll, but you can't click.
Exactly. It's driving me nuts. And I just.
Can you at least like right click? Can both clickers don't work?
Nothing. None of the buttons work on it, but it scrolls. Oh, no. It's driven me insane tonight to not have this mouse. Okay. Do you know what life is like without a mouse?
I mean, yeah, I do. Sometimes I don't use a mouse.
Oh, okay. Use a trackpad. So sorry. So sorry to make my inconvenience such a menial.
No, it's not. I'm not saying that. I have a lot of sympathy for, mouseless.
I'm just trying to tell you, it's been a rough day. Okay, it's been a rough day.
Well, for productivity, I mean, yeah, you do want a mouse, and without it, I can imagine it slowing you down quite a bit. I'm just like like what you just described, the scene of you having a mouse fall and then having to pick at a bookcase with their pen to get.
Oh yeah, like all these people right in the middle of the library. I have to get down and get this battery that had rolled underneath one of the bookshelves.
Sounds like a great like Mr. Bean episode, sketch at least. Well, I'm so sorry. What are you gonna do?
I'm retiring. I'm here to announce I'm done. I'm passing the torch. I'm bowing out, okay?
You know, a man needs his mouse, and without it, I guess, what more is there left? I don't know. Do you have Amazon Prime? You know, can you get one sent to you within the next day?
Yeah. Logitech will have to save me. That will be a purchase, I guess.
I think it's time for you to upgrade mice.
Mice?
Well. Yeah. How long have you had that one?
You know what I was contemplating is when I got my last laptop, I got one of these deals.
Oh, stylus. Like,
yeah. It's I don't know if I can make this change this late in life to one of these, but
Oh no. I don't think it's appropriate for what you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was my
thank you for the update. I love hearing about you and your tech life.
That's it. It was not quiet at the library, by the way. It's just like a party for some people. I was like,
which
can everyone just shut up? I'm not disclosing the location.
Because I feel like I know which one you're talking about.
It's that one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that
the one with the big kids area?
I think that's a lot of libraries, but yeah, it's probably, given our proximity to one another, it probably is that one. How about you? Did you have any situations over the weekend? Did you...
I just spent it with family, oh, like, this is boring. I don't have anything.
No, it's
like,
not. No, it's not. Way.
I don't care to talk about it. I don't care for other people to know. I don't even care for you to.
It entered your mind. You were about to share with us.
I was going to tell you what I did over the weekend, and then I'm playing it back in my head, and I'm thinking, this sounds really boring. I wouldn't want to subject other people to listen to it.
Wait, we've got them hostage. They have to listen.
It's fine. I'm gonna forgo my
read books all weekend. That's what he did. Mm-hmm. Well, then on that note, Wei, we have another week coming up here at the site, and want to make mention that over the past weekend, some great shows up on the Post Wrestling site. If you want special free edition of Collision Course, Kate and John Cena had you all covered on Saturday evening. I did a soliloquy on TNA Slammiversary that you can check out. Me here in this room talking to myself with my mouse, my dearly departed mouse. The final live wrestling show that my mouse took in. TNA Slammiversary.
R.I.P. Yeah.
From Moose to Mouse, the tales of John Pollock's Saturday night. And then on Sunday, we had our first of 12 G1 shows, Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord running down night one and night two, 19 matches in succinct recap form, giving you their thoughts on the first two nights in Osaka and how people's picks might have been blown up, how some of them might have stood up well. You can be following along with the points as they are going through the post-wrestling pool that is ongoing.
Yeah, by the way, on all of these show descriptions, even if you're not signed up to the cafe, which you should be so you can listen to the reviews, but if you simply want to go to the show descriptions over at postwrestling.com, with every one of these podcasts, we will have our hosts give their match recommendation. So if you don't have the time to watch all 19 matches from the opening weekend, well, maybe you have time. Maybe you have the time to cherry pick maybe the top three from each night, which Bruce and Karen have very greatly, very nicely indicated here. So go to postwrestling.com for that or sign up for free to our free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Yeah, we throw you nuggets on the free tier up on postwrestlingcafe.com. If you want to join, just, you know, like take a glimpse into the window, see what's going on inside of the cafe,
and then
maybe you'll want to ring the bell and come in.
You come in and loiter. We don't mind, you know. Just don't disturb the paying customers, which I don't think you will.
That's right. Keep it quiet, unlike the library. And then Sunday night, the NWA podcast. I am halfway through this thing. I'm not exaggerating. I think this is their best show ever. This is one of the best breakdowns of this whole Joe Biden transfer of power to Kamala Harris over the weekend, which is, I mean, someone out there needs to like recut this WrestleMania behind the curtain trailer into this story.
Oh, it's gonna happen. We're maybe after November, maybe even after January. You know, I'm sure the documentary will be there.
I guess Paul Levesque is Nancy Pelosi, and I think
who's the Rock and who's Cody?
I mean, Cody would probably be Kamala Harris, and I mean, Joe Biden's kind of the Rock in this scenario. Although he's not going to be headlining night one or night two. Might be in a prominent position at the convention next month, perhaps. I think that's going to be the big, okay. It's going to be Joe Biden Appreciation Night at the convention, I think.
Yeah, sure. Interesting. I don't know about that analogy fully, but I'm sure there's something there.
It's a great discussion that they have. The first half of the show is dedicated to this.
And when you say the first half, you mean the first 2.5 hours, okay? Yes. Because this is a mammoth
first half
5-hour show. They spent the first 2.5 hours talking about this. And for those unaware, Chris actually has a career in politics. So he comes in with a lot of hot takes and a lot of insight and a lot of information, which you can choose to agree with or disagree with. But it is, I'll tell you, there wasn't any show, any outlet that I was looking forward to cover this more than the NWA podcast on Sunday. So, listen to that in the free feed.
Yes. I watched a ton of coverage on all of this stuff on Sunday. And honestly, I think Chris is the most likely of anyone on this site to, like pop up on Bill Maher one day. I think Chris is, he's shooting for the stars. But he has a great discussion as he does with Nate, Andrew, and of course Two-Way Ray, who was manning the super chats in quick and fast and furious fashion on Sunday night. So go check all of that out from the NWA podcast. All right, let's talk a bit about what is going on in the news. And an unfortunate story to start off. There was this big fire in Cleveland, and unfortunately, one of the buildings that was destroyed was Johnny Gargano, his family's restaurant, Gargano's Catering. This was like a massive fire. It took apparently, just looking at the local news, took nearly 70 firefighters that were called upon to help put this fire out that lasted over 3 hours, did around $700,000 in damages. And Johnny Gargano did post a note about this, that his father had worked in that building for 50 years and his father's 82. And thankfully, he was not there when the fire began. But yeah, you can see some of the photos. And he had noted that, you know, it's it was a place like some fans would go by for, he was expecting it for SummerSlam weekend in 2 weeks as well. So just very sad. I mean, his whole, you know, his father, I'm sure many members of his family attached to this place. So it's just a very sad story. But this was covered pretty significantly in the Cleveland news.
Heartbreaking, really, you know, and for it to happen right now, mere weeks before what might have been like its busiest weekend like ever, you know, just given kind of like Gargano's sort of newfound notoriety as part of a main roster, and then SummerSlam, an arena, you know, or sorry, a stadium level show coming to the city full of wrestling fans. Very sad, but at the same time, maybe some silver lining there, because I guarantee you, if they open up any sort of pop-up Gargano's anywhere, it will receive a ton of support. But the bigger heartbreak, of course, is just the loss of the building. You know, 50 years, that's a lot of time to put into anything. It's a lifetime. And I imagine maybe, like, even, you know, despite the fact that he's 82 years old, probably had no intentions of retiring. And even beyond retirement, maybe had plans of passing it on to future family members. Who knows? All that is unfortunately gone now. But thankfully, people are okay. Buildings can always be rebuilt. Memories can be made again. So hopefully there's still a future for Gargano's. I was curious to try the pizza.
I was like... Like, I'll be honest, I wasn't even familiar with this before this news, but I was like just reading it on Yelp, and they had like a lot of like positive reviews, and like the pizza sounded like it was like a specialty.
Yeah.
So anyway, as Wei mentioned, the main thing is no one was hurt here, because it was a gigantic fire that they had. TNT Sports, they put out a statement online. This is going to get contentious. That is my prediction. But today was their deadline to submit their matching rights, because the NBA had presented TNT, Warner Brothers Discovery, with the offers that they have on the table. And TNT Sports wrote, "We're proud of how we have delivered for basketball fans by providing best-in-class coverage throughout our four-decade partnership with the NBA in an effort to continue our long-standing partnership during both exclusive and non-exclusive negotiation periods. We acted in good faith to present strong bids that were fair to both parties. Regrettably, the league notified us of its intention to accept other offers for the games in our current rights package, leaving us to proceed under the matching rights provision, which is an integral part of our current agreement and the rights we have paid for under it. We have reviewed the offers and matched one of them. This will allow fans to keep enjoying our unparalleled coverage, including the best live game productions in the industry and our iconic studio shows and talent, while building on our proven 40-year commitment for many more years. Our matching paperwork was submitted to the league today. We look forward to the NBA executing our new contract." Very presumptuous with that last sentence, but the belief is that they are not trying to match the NBC package, which is the biggest package and the main one that TNT, basically what TNT's deal was. They are trying to match the $1.8 billion deal that Amazon has made. And I just cannot see this ending unless they are going to the courts, or if Warner Brothers Discovery is given some sort of just something to alleviate this and go away. Because you're just not going to force your way into this relationship that clearly the NBA is ready to move on from. And it is going to be the question of, like, what is a match? Part of this is going to be stating that we can offer you TNT and for the streaming component on Max, but they're going to state our Amazon package is just for streaming and Amazon is stronger than Max. Like, Amazon has a worldwide presence, whereas Max is much more limited. And they're going to have their reasons of like why we want this to be an exclusively streaming package as opposed to being on linear television. It's
very
like
uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. It's like the girl is breaking up with you,
yeah,
and you're making like you're trying to argue why you're not going to accept that.
You can't break up with me. It says on this. Yeah.
We are a match. And yeah, she has probably made a match with someone else and it's named Amazon. So, all this is to say, like, why are we talking about this? Could this have an impact on AEW? It could. It could not as well. But this is like the identity of TNT is going to be drastically altered, whether they somehow through a miracle could work out a deal with the NBA or if they lose the NBA. Like, those are two very different realities for TNT.
Okay. I guess my question is, in that analogy, is AEW just sort of like, you know, the other person in waiting, hoping that this person breaks up fully with, you know, the person that doesn't want anything to do with them? My question would be, does this in any way affect AEW's leverage, whether or not they get NBA on TNT? Does it affect at all how much money they stand to make from an offer from WBD?
I mean, I could only kind of guess, being that this is going to take up a lot of Warner Brothers Discovery's focus, and can they even finalize a deal with AEW until they have this squared away and they know what their programming will be a year from now, because they still have the NBA for the next season. It's the following season that these new deals go into effect. But financially, I mean, WBD has an enormous debt load, and to match this, you're committing to $1.8 billion per year versus not. But then you're losing some major prestige programming for
you're possibly getting a weaker station overall.
That's it. Like, TNT becomes a lot less desirable to a lot of these carriers when you're removing the NBA package from it. So this is going to have a massive impact regardless of what happens here. And with AEW, I mean, depending on when this exclusive negotiating period ends, if it's officially ended now, like, we know July it was going to end. I don't know what your thought is on AEW. Like, you have Tony Khan describing we're in the red zone. Like, how close are they to a deal? It would be like, my thought would be it's very hard for Warner Brothers Discovery to commit to AEW when they don't have this all squared away. And this could be done and they could just walk away from the NBA, but that is not what they want to be doing. They want to try and make this match and go after this Amazon package. But I would think like they have a commitment to AEW that I wouldn't be too concerned about this, but you can never be too sure when it comes to how one thing could affect the other. And if there's a trickle down effect that it impacts other programming.
Maybe to an even bigger concern for AEW, does WBD have a matching clause for the Big Bang Theory contract?
Oh, I would hope that they have matching rights for the Big Bang Theory, because that would be just too much of a loss. This is the NBA. You'll get over it. But the Big Bang Theory, that's your high school sweetheart right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we will continue the tumultuous period of this nasty breakup led by David Zaslav. All right, let us continue on. The G1 kicked off over the weekend, and we're not going to go through the shows. Karen and Bruce did a really great job of doing that, but some of the stories coming out of the weekend. So in the A block, Zack Sabre Jr. and Evil are on top. They are both 2-0 after two matches apiece, while on the B block, Hanare and Yuya Uemura have 4 points at 2-0, while Konosuke Takeshita and Jeff Cobb are still undefeated, but they've only had one match each, and they're going to be facing off against each other tomorrow on Tuesday's show, because their match was supposed to be part of the Sunday shows, but Takeshita was doing the DDT show, and that got moved to Tuesday. You had Naito coming out of the gate, losing both of his first two matches as IWGP champion, as did David Finlay, who is the global heavyweight champion, lost his first two, and I would say if we're focusing on the native stars that have the biggest spotlight in terms of increasing the profile on Shota Umino, Yota Tsuji, and Yuya Uemura, I have to say of the three, I think Yuya Uemura has had a really great tournament so far, just two matches in. Yota Tsuji had an excellent match with Konosuke Takeshita. I kind of divorce Ren Narita now from this list. Like, just watching him at this point, I feel this House of Torture, this is nothing new. It just feels like such a dead-end character for him that I don't even see someone in the class of somebody that is, like, the future of New Japan. Not in this current incarnation that Ren Narita is in. He feels like just a guy that is, almost feels like he is our next Yujiro. And you know how damning a comparison that is if it's coming from me. I really like Ren Narita, but I do not like him in this role. And he just feels as though he's kind of migrated off to the side. And I'm more focused on, Umino, Uemura, and Tsuji. But yeah, Uemura had, I see a ton of upside in him. Tsuji might be the front runner of the three, but I think Uemura, that guy could have a really excellent breakthrough tournament as well. And they also gave wins on the first night to both Oleg Bolton and Callum Newman, somewhat surprisingly, which is going to do havoc on my ballot because I think I had Newman losing all of his matches in the G1 and Oleg Bolton at least picking up some wins were my predictions, as I recall.
What were your stand-up matches so far of the weekend?
As you've got them here from night two, I would state that Zack Sabre Jr. and Tetsuya Naito had a pretty nice match together. Naito looked better in these two matches, certainly than the Jon Moxley match, but the Sabre match was, he also had Zack Sabre Jr. and Shingo Takagi as his opponents. That one was a very good match. Gabe Kidd, while we're talking about it, I think Gabe Kidd, he had a surprisingly good match with Evil on the first night, like just a good brawl and going all over the arena. And then with Great O'Khan, there was a ton of intensity to this match that Gabe Kidd brings. So I would certainly say that one stood out for me. And Uemura and Goto was pretty good for the performance they had in Uemura beating Goto. I'd recommend Umino Takagi, and I liked Zach and Naito as well. So kind of those are the matches that stood out. And yeah, the first night here, Tsuji and Takeshita was really, really excellent here. I'd agree with a lot of these. Jake Lee hasn't really stood out for me two matches in so far, but they did book him very strong against Sonata on the first night. That was the shortest match of the 10 on night number one. But I wouldn't say insane match of the year candidate so far. Tsuji and Takeshita got very, very good. I think Takeshita is going to be very strong in this tournament. But I did find, like, for 19 matches, they did not feel like a slog to get through. So those were our first two nights. And Tuesday, they're in Hiroshima, and we've got Tetsuya Naito against Jake Lee, Sonata versus Evil, the rematch that I know everyone is counting down to, especially Eric Marcotte. Shota Umino against Gabe Kidd, Great O'Khan against Shingo Takagi, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Callum Newman. That's an interesting match. And then Konosuke Takeshita and Jeff Cobb is the lone B-block match on Tuesday's show. Our next G1 show will be Thursday with myself and Eric Marcotte. We'll go through Tuesday and Thursday's tournament matches. So that's coming up Thursday and Sunday. I think a first-time pairing. They've mentioned there's 50 first-time matches in this year's G1. Well, Post Wrestling has a first-time combination of Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson this Sunday as they review day 5 and day 6 that are happening this Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I'm almost ashamed to say, but this is, I think, the first time we've had two women host a show together in Post Wrestling's history. And that alone, I think, you know, I like, we've always wanted to hear these two do a show together. And I think Kate has kind of said as much to me. We just never really had the opportunity to do it. And now we do. The G1 coming up this week. So the G and G1 is for the girls. Thank you, Karen Peterson. So I'm looking very much forward to that. I'm looking forward to hearing Kate on these shows talk about New Japan as well. So postwrestling.com/G1 for all of your G1 coverage over at Post Wrestling, including our contest results. Of course, our contest sponsored by Chop shop-tees.com/postwrestling. I'm just going to update everybody on the C block standings, okay? The all important C block standings. And of you and I, John, of everybody involved, all the geniuses put together, all the hours spent studying, analyzing professional wrestling, none of us can match the incredible predicting abilities of Randobot, who still sits atop after two nights of the post-wrestling C-Block standings with 14 points. The only person who might be able to catch him right now is Eric Marcotte with 13 points. The rest of us, including you and I, are tied for third place.
Well, we're not too far out of the mix. We're doing respectable.
We're doing respectable, sure. But I do think AI is the one to beat when it comes to this.
Okay, well, Randobot is leading things. It's us versus technology for the next month. We'll see how we fare. Collision on Saturday. It was their first night at the Esports Stadium in Arlington, Texas. WrestleTix announced 1,238 tickets distributed. The keynotes coming out of it, Darby Allin issuing the challenge to Jack Perry. So that looks to be the TNT title match for All In on August 25th. Unfortunately, Sky Blue broke her foot in the match with Hikaru Shida when she was taking a pescado to the floor, and then posted an update with her foot in a cast. So yeah, she'll be out of action for some time. But this was one of those occasions where they just called the match off immediately and they didn't try to gut their way through it. It became pretty evident that Sky Blue could not continue. And it, very unfortunate. I did think Shida like just kind of just improvised and just played to the crowd and then later had to do a promo on the show. So obviously she was going to be winning because this was setting up a match with Britt Baker for Wednesday that we'll see. And we also had the debut of Hologram beating Gringo Loco. Those were some of the highlights of Collision. Did you get to see the setup at all?
I watched a bit of it, and I watched like mainly for the production, for the setup, and the new theme music, which a lot of people don't seem to enjoy. I think the new, like, the music is what it is, okay? Like, it's been a year since the Elton John thing. I'm assuming they either didn't want to pay for it, or they just, I don't know, whatever. I don't think it's a big deal. It's just a theme song, everybody. You know, we're here for the show, not necessarily the music. I think we'll all get used to it fine. The set, I think, looks great. You know, I heard Cino and Kate talk about it, and I think Cino brought up that it's like, it's either reminiscent of or it might directly be some sort of esports stadium. So it's like really well lit. And I think for like 1,000, you know, crowd, it looks and sounds, I think, about as good as you could expect. You know, I think it's a step up from the Performance Center. It doesn't feel as artificial as the Performance Center, for instance, with their like giant LED screens everywhere. The atmosphere, at least for this first show, I thought was quite good.
Some contract news. Over the weekend, Fightful had reported that Bobby Lashley's contract is going to be up sometime over the next month. And then Dave Meltzer also adding that MVP's contract is going to be up. And the Observer is expecting that neither is going to be coming back. So this naturally brings up where these two end up. Bobby Lashley is an interesting one because he's 48 years old now. He has not wrestled since May 5th. If you remember, he was announced for the King of the Ring tournament and then got swapped in a qualifying match, and we haven't seen him since. MVP, Omos has been a really interesting one where he's been on TV three times over the last year. He's been assigned battle royals, and the rest, it's just house shows that he works with MVP in his corner. Omos is pretty much just not been used during this Paul Levesque run. And I guess when you're looking at things, Wei, people are going to look naturally at an AEW. Is a Bobby Lashley someone that you're going after?
I think the answer is whether or not a new talent can provide any sort of new eyeballs or buzz for your company. And I think in Lashley's case, the answer is yes. I guess the only question is like, how much is he expecting? How much money is he asking for? And are you going to get your return on investment the way Tony Khan thinks they might with the Sasha Ospreay or Okada? Is Lashley like asking for, you know, the same type of money as like any of those talents? But I would definitely at least consider it, especially if the sort of rumors are out there that they might be looking towards a Hurt Business reunion. I think the Hurt Business is one of those concepts that you definitely get the sense that they left a lot, you know, that they didn't fully see to their potential. And that's a great sort of redemption story for another company to be able to pick up and be able to say, we did what another company couldn't do. It's what, you know, kind of WWE based their like identities of like Steve Austin and like Mick Foley and, you know, on Terra Rise and like you name it, you know, all these guys that were neglected by this other company that we, the Radicals, like that we brought over and were able to manage to make stars. WWE is sort of like doing similar with talents coming over from AEW. So for AEW to be able to take the Hurt business and actually to give them the type of story and the type of role that WWE missed out on, I think would be good for that sort of like brand war. And like MVP too, like, you know, again, another criminally underutilized talking talent that I think would hopefully add a lot. So I definitely would say that they're probably considering it. It's just, it comes down to numbers, I think.
Yeah, I'm higher on the idea of MVP being utilized for someone. Like, obviously, AEW has, you know, they're not at the level of, like, the managers that they once had, but they clearly have an openness of people being mouthpieces for the right guy. And I think MVP is a great addition in that sense.
But Stokely is great. And can we say Stokely has been fully utilized to his potential?
I think it's better now that you have Chris Statlander in the heel role. But it's taken some time, certainly. And it's not like you have the plethora of managers you once did. And some like really fell flat in those roles as well. I look at the age factor, and more so it's just another guy that I don't think would be coming at a, you know, discounted rate either. You know, this guy has had some very big earnings years here in WWE. Was, you know, someone that was handled very well in this return to WWE.
Towards the end, maybe, but not for a good chunk of it.
Well, for a period when he was like champion and they were having this guy just demolish everybody, like
sure. I'm more so thinking about the hit him with the pose, Lashley's sisters.
Yeah, but after that, I mean, they really
could reunite
did dial
with
in.
Leo Rush.
He could reunite with Leo Rush. All those things are on the table.
Is AEW in a position to acquire like more big name talent right now? Is another question.
Do they have the room for him? And is this guy going to be a game changer? Listen, he's not going to be a game changer. Like Bobby Lashley is just not that game changer. And I guess that's what you're asking, is that you bring this guy in. Well, that's another guy that we're working into like a upper tier mid, like main event mix. And I just don't know if he, like, sometimes there are people like that are just, you know, it's a case by case basis. And I think he would be a tougher one to move in, but
we'll I can see Tony wanting to acquire those toys for his toy box.
Well, there's a lot of toys there, a lot of toys in the toy box. SmackDown on Friday, did their lowest audience since June 14th in several weeks, 2,313,000 viewers and a 0.65 in the demo, which was down 8%. Rampage did 284,000 viewers and a 0.10, which was their lowest audience since June the 7th. And this was for a pretty good lineup that they did have. You had the Lucha Brothers in action. You had, you know, you had Jericho wrestling on Rampage, which is not a every week occurrence either. I'd be very curious as well, like coming off of the convention the night before, what the cable news numbers were like on Friday evening as well. But both shows were down, but not a crazy Rampage down more than SmackDown was. And the final notes are the matches for Tuesday night's NXT. Get ready for Lexus King against Eddie Thorpe, Ashanti the Adonis against Oro Mensah, the no DQ match between Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs, Ren Sinclair against Carly Bright, and a sit-down interview with Thea Hale. And then Blood and Guts is Wednesday with the 5-on-5 match, Okada, The Bucks, Hangman Page, and Jack Perry against Mark Briscoe, The Acclaimed, Swerve Strickland, and Darby Allin. Jericho defends the FTW title against Minoru Suzuki. Britt Baker in her first match back against Hikaru Shida. The debut of The Glamour, Mariah May, and MJF is on the show. So that's a lot to, you know, it's a 2-hour format, but this Blood and Guts is going to be, I mean, they are probably going to eat up at least 45 to 50 minutes.
Oh, yeah, as they should. I mean, if you know the last ratings patterns is any sort of indication, I imagine you'll probably get extended entrances all the way until the match to take up the full hour, just, you know, just to kind of carry over. I'm interested to see if they start the show off with this or if they use the second half more. But, you know, this is one of the bigger dynamites of the entire year. Blood and Guts by this point is, rightfully so, is almost like promoted as like a free pay-per-view that people, you know, get on TV. At least that's the sort of caliber of match that they usually provide. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Each one of these has been very enjoyable, and War Games in general has been very enjoyable as a concept that has been brought back over the past decade.
All right, all your news can be found at postwrestling.com. all of our regular shows are coming up this week, and again, you can jump on board postwrestlingcafe.com, where we will have two G1 shows this week, and then we've got a review of Deadpool 2 coming out on Thursday. The countdown to Deadpool and Wolverine is almost up, so they're calling in the big guns. Wei Ting will be on with Rich Van at WH Park this Thursday.
The movie comes out this week, so this is the last one in the series, everybody, before you get the main event, a review of Deadpool and Wolverine next week with Rich, WH, and John Pollock himself. This man has been studying for this, okay? He's training like it's the Olympics. All right, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that. The main event coming up next week. When you sign up for the Post Wrestling Cafe, which you also, of course, get up all the G1 reviews, every single one that's about to come out. You get all of our reviews that are coming up next week, next month, and for Rewind Away, Rewind a SmackDown every single week, AEW Collision reviews every single week, and ad-free podcasts, including this one, so you don't have to listen to this.
Well, tonight we go to the Rush Center in Green Bay, Wisconsin for tonight's edition of Raw. 6,119 tickets out, according to the good people at WrestleTix. And listen, if there is one thing you can always count on for WWE, it is hammering you over the head when there's going to be a programming change. And all night long, this was the go-home show for Sci-Fi next week. They were just constantly... Next 2 weeks on Sci-Fi, they had commercials cut. They had Michael Cole reminding you how you could watch this show and not know where it's going to be next week is beyond me. But you will have tons of people that are tuning on to USA Network next week and will be confused. But they could not have done a stronger job, I thought, of promoting this next week.
They're an incredibly well-oiled machine when it comes to this sort of thing. And you need to be obvious with it, because as much as I think you might think they might hit somebody over the head with it, it's probably not enough.
Well, Gunther started off the show and he's trying to speak and the crowd is just jumping on him with boos, and he is about to apologize to what he said about Damian Priest last week, but admits, I meant all of it. Damian Priest is a bum. And he said, there's a reason I'm the one starting the show instead of Priest, because he's a pretender and a wannabe with some sob story about growing up. And he has a saying, show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. Priest is street trash. So once again, why don't you just come out, hand over the belt, and then you can go home to your trailer park. So Damian Priest comes out, and he's not handing this title belt up, nor going home to a trailer park. Instead, he attacks Gunther, and there was a wild brawl. The officials are out. Crowd was going nuts for this, and Priest attacks security, including taking this one poor guy by the throat and throwing him over the top. And I think this guy was killed.
He might have been beaten up worse than the Wyatt family did to all those random names. Yeah.
So... I thought a really strong open to the show with this brawl. Had a lot of intensity, had a lot of heat, and this continued after the break, where they found each other in the back, they had to be separated again, and then were ejected from the building for the rest of the night.
It was a good classic babyface building segment for Damian Priest here. And, you know, at this point, like, Priest's promo is passable, but there's really nothing he could have said, no promo he could have cut in a segment like this that I think would have garnered as big of a reaction as just coming out and just not saying anything and just beating Gunther up for the lines that he said last week. Tonight's reaction, I think, exactly showed how effective last week's promo segment was and how effective calling somebody, what do you call him?
Trailer park trash?
I don't think he called him trailer park trash maybe this week. Last
he
week
said go home to the trailer park, and he called him a bum.
Yeah.
Street trash.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. We got to be specific. All right. Yeah.
Isn't trash you put in the wastebasket. This is the stuff you put out by the curb on Friday mornings.
Yes. Yes. I think it's turned Damian Priest into, to me, the most over he's been in this run, certainly as a babyface, but maybe even as a character in general since he's won the championship. So they're doing a great job of making what I felt was like a bit of a challenging main event. For SummerSlam, feel like it's an effective main event for SummerSlam.
Ilya Dragunov against Bron Breakker. This is the number one contenders match to determine who faces Sami Zayn at SummerSlam. And Bron just pummels him at the beginning when Ilya comes back with this vicious knee. They go to the edge of the apron and Ilya tries to lift up Bron, but he pops off. And then Bron manages to lift Ilya and drop him down, ribs first, on top of the post. And this would set up our commercial break as Ilya had to sell his ribs. And this man looked like he was about to go into labor with how intense he was selling. These were like contractions the man was feeling after each gut buster.
Yeah.
So there's these spinning chops from Ilya. He stops Bron with a boot and lands the Constantine special. And then multiple attempts before he finally gets Bron up for a powerbomb because the ribs are giving him issues. And we see the no-hands Frankensteiner that Pat McAfee is now calling the Breakensteiner. Ladies and gentlemen, the Breakensteiner. Yeah. And that leads to a big near fall. This crowd is just going nuts. And then he tries for the H-bomb, hits it, but he cannot capitalize, but takes him to the edge, lands a Death Valley driver. And then Ilya leaps off the apron for an H-bomb and is speared in midair, crashing into the LED screen at the side of the ring. And there was this little detail where Ilya's selling on the floor and Bron rolls into the ring. And he doesn't just stand there. He goes into the corner and gets into the position for the spear as if he's going to roll in to break the count right into a spear. But it's not even needed because the referee, Daphne LeSean, goes to the floor and she just stops the match. And Bron is declared the winner in 13:04, setting up a rematch with Zayn and Breakker. I thought this was one of the better WWE TV matches in a while. I thought this was spectacular.
It was really, really excellent. Yeah. I mean, these two are the two top call-ups of this year's draft. And by this point, several months in, I think both have made like a good name for themselves for like their very highly intense styles. Both have like also pretty strongly established characters, but I would say both really got over by the quality of their matches. And I think the distinctiveness of their in-ring styles. Both felt really hot going into this match and both felt really hot even coming out of it. I think the finish is a good finish. You know, for one thing, it makes Bron look devastating, puts him in title contention, and makes Dragunov to me like look tough, with the only way to beat him being via this sort of like fluky type of finish. Never quits, you know, like, so they're doing a great job with both these guys. And at this point, like knowing that they're going to Breakker versus Sammy for SummerSlam, does it change your opinion of Sammy beating Bron at all? I don't even know what your opinion was, actually. I forget. Like, but I saw a lot of backlash against, like, you know, how could they have Bron Breakker lose in Toronto? I don't even remember how I felt at this point. There's been a lot of wrestling since then. But I like the way they got Bron back to the championship match. They gave him a legitimate win here. You know, it wasn't just coming out, attacking Sami Zayn and, you know, boom, title shot. He beat the number one contender, or at least the perceived number one contender in Ilya Dragunov, and sets the stage for a bigger win in a stadium for Bron Breakker.
Yeah, I mean, the story they're going with is that Bron underestimated Sami Zayn at Money in the Bank. And this time around, you have you obviously have the believability that either guy can win this match. I wasn't crazy about Bron losing in such a fashion in Toronto. I don't think it was, you know, detrimental to the guy. And I think you'd be questioning it if he lost similar at SummerSlam, but I don't know if too many people are expecting that at SummerSlam.
No, I can't see it. I think they're already, you know, giving us the Sami Zayn IC title exit strategy by the end of this show.
Yes, we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Judgment Day, a lot of Judgment Day on the show, minus Damian Priest, who's been ejected. And Rhea says that eventually they will all hold the gold again. And Dominic asks about Jey Uso's tweet towards Rhea asking for her number. And you replied with yeet. And Rhea just kind of laughs it off and says, very important line, I've also been looking at your socials too. So we have now incorporated their socials into Story.
We have.
So yes. A lot has been learned then by these two. Maybe this is an open relationship.
Yeah.
To a degree. To a degree. Liv Morgan, not part of those open borders.
Well, okay. So I don't... I can't explain, John. Okay. Maybe the characters that they play have a different filter that only allows them to see the in-character posts of their social medias, media accounts. I don't know if we're supposed to think that deeply about it.
Okay.
Should wrestlers have separate social media accounts for their characters?
No. This is... Most people are up to speed here.
I don't think that's such a bad idea, you know, for the privacy of the wrestlers.
How about this? No socials for anyone that is on television.
But then how do you monetize their incredible fame? How does WWE advertise their incredible social media reach? And
WWE can do that. Get an intern to play Rhea Ripley on Twitter.
Well, we might get to that in the future.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. It's Akira Tozawa's birthday. Oh, before we get there, so after the references, Balor says, Dom, you need to face Jey Uso tonight, and Rhea thinks this is a horrible idea, and she gets very protective of Jey not to put your hands on him, and tells Dom, use your brain, and Balor is just goading Dominic and says, you know what you need to do. So we get, again, Finn Balor is the one kind of stirring the pot here, and I think you're more and more focusing on him, which is probably not by accident.
No, I don't think so. No.
They have a birthday cake for Tozawa. It's his 39th birthday, and they're with Xavier Woods, and they're about to celebrate their birthday with a six-man tag. Lyra Valkyria has Katana Chance and Caden Carter in her corner against Sonya Deville. They got a lot more time this week for Sonya Deville than last week's minute. So Lyra crashes through the ropes and kind of just fell to the floor here to set up the commercial. Comes back. Lyra hit a Northern Lights. The crowd was kind of subdued for this. The Deville's advocate. This needs to, we need a better, I love a good pun, but this is not a good one.
Deville's advocate. Yeah.
I get what they're going for, but it's just, it's not a smooth one.
It's like a, maybe a decent YouTube show title. Even that, I guess you could question, but it's not great for like a serious finisher for what is like a pretty serious character at this point.
So Deville's advocate is countered with a gut-wrench sit-out powerbomb by Lyra. Starks then knocks Lyra off the turnbuckle, and we get everyone fighting on the floor. Lyra goes for a dropkick through the ropes, and it leaves her back to Sonya to capitalize and hit Deville's advocate and win in 8 minutes and 9 seconds.
Yeah. I thought the match was just kind of okay. You know, pretty typical build to like a six-person feud. Not particularly hot with this crowd. Didn't do a whole lot to increase my interest in the program, but I think the continued repeat appearances that they're giving this particular crew, and we include Zelina Vega in that as well, I think has ultimately like helped the entire mid-card of this women's division.
And then as Shayna Baszler was walking to the back with Zoe Stark, she saw a fan in a hoodie who nailed her, and it was Miyu Yamashita, who said, I'll see you this Sunday in Brooklyn. And that was our setup angle for Bloodsport. No, did not happen. We will get Shayna Baszler at Bloodsport. And I would not be surprised if they had like Deville and Stark in her corner potentially for something like this.
Yeah, wasn't Stark in the last one?
No, Baszler was in the last one.
Stark in the corner last time?
Was she in the corner? Maybe she was.
From what I remember. Anyway, I have a very foggy memory, everybody. I don't sense any sort of acknowledgement on WWE TV about any of this.
No, not for this.
But it's fascinating. You got Shayna, you got the Creeds. Who else from the WWE?
Are we going to get a graphic for Nick Khan if he is set to appear and make his second Bloodsport appearance?
If Brett Lauderdale I think you would see that. It would be a wonderful advertisement, but I don't think so. No.
So we did not get a hand delivery this week. We just got the maybe they just
they figured out how to use Dropbox.
Yeah, we got the Wyatt Dropbox. And this week's message is from Nikki Cross. We're going to learn about her, and what we learned about her was They ignored you and watched you suffer. And we get the close-up as she starts sobbing and then just screams. And I mean screams. Cool production. I can't say I learned anything about the inner turmoil of Nikki Cross here compared to the others.
Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed. I felt like they had set an expectation that we were going to get serious interview backstories for each of the members. That this kind of broke the streak, right? You know, we got some sort of profile on Nikki Cross, but it just came in the form of like an in-character sort of like thin, muffled, heavily filtered type of few lines in character, and then just a big scream, which listen, like, if it's not such a bad thing if they realize there's nothing any of these few could say to top what we'd already heard. We discussed last week, how could they possibly top what, you know, both Bo Dallas and what Eric Rowan were able to give us, because theirs were real. You can't possibly have Nikki Cross come out and say something in character. Alexa Bliss really hurt me. You know, like, what? I've been...
always almost a superhero, but never officially.
Exactly, yeah. Like, that would have sounded silly. So this might have been the best option that they had, you know, just have her come out, like, show her character a little bit, scream, just to kind of leave some impression for audiences. So at this point, I think they've done enough to establish the group that these are enough.
I was sulking in the background for 6 months, and never did it lead anywhere.
Yeah, that would be the angle I would take if she had to cut a real promo. Yeah.
Second hour begins with CM Punk, who comes out to start the our second hour, and he asks Green Bay, "Is the Bay green? Hello, is this on?" And then he points out, "Well, my shoes are pink." More silence. I was like, man, he better have something here. And he said, "Well, I think we should stain both with the blood of a psychopath." And then quickly announces he was cleared on Saturday by his surgeon, and he calls out Drew McIntyre. This was the stand-up version of a Phil Brooks was not as in demand here in Green Bay. I didn't know how this guy was starting this promo.
I guess at this point, like, Punk has felt confident enough that at his own ability that I think he could start off from like the most far off, like, experimental places with a promo and still somehow get a reaction. Like, I think this is the type of guy who could make a mustache promo work. Eli Cottonwood. So maybe this was his attempt to show, hey, I could say whatever I want. Is the pay green?
Yeah, you
got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Drew walks out and he says that nothing will stop him from getting into that ring, except for the fact I don't want to. So Punk charges at him, but the refs are out, and they pull Punk away from him. Drew says, "This match is a lot bigger than Green Bay." And he pulls out the bracelet, the dreaded bracelet. And Adam Pearce explains that Drew is reinstated. Punk is cleared. The match is official for SummerSlam. But if either lay a finger on the other, the match is off, and both will be suspended. And then says, "We also have a referee problem." And boom, Seth Rollins' music plays. And I don't know if this was when he was supposed to be cued, but he comes out and it almost felt as though Pierce was supposed to, I don't know, it just felt awkward the way he comes out. But then Rollins explained what he is here for and calls both Punk and Drew morons. And everyone else is scared to get between them, but not Seth. He will be the guest referee, upsetting both Drew and Punk. And next week, we will have a segment with the three of them as Seth goes over the referee's instructions. Not a contract signing, not a face-to-face. It is the referee's instructions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe at first. I don't think we've ever had an official referee's instructions built segment.
No, that's usually done in like the 10 seconds before the bell rings, but yeah, we're going to do a whole segment on it.
Well, anything to get these guys in.
Got to get Punk together on Sci-Fi.
Yeah. Well, is there no contract signing? Maybe. Why did they do that?
Well, I guess it's official, so maybe I don't know how they have brokered this without any kind of signature.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, whatever. I thought, you know, we finally have a clear direction now for this program. We've been kind of dangling the possible, possibility of a Rollins, you know, being in the match instead of a CM Punk. And now we have our clearance for CM Punk. We are getting CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre, the match that they've been building to now for what, entire like 7 months or something like that?
This feels like a big match. By the time they've announced this and how they've built it up, it feels like a really big match, and probably some kind of combination of whether it's Seth with one of these two or a three-way, something to come back to Berlin with in a couple of weeks after SummerSlam. I could see something resulting from this and Seth being intertwined.
Yeah. I think it's always like tricky when you have to have, like, what we essentially saw for like the past, I don't know, like few weeks was a contingency plan playing out in front of us with Seth Rollins being kind of awkwardly involved in all of this. But I think they overall did a pretty good job weaving him into this to feel as organically as you can while still like waiting, you know, for Punk status in limbo. And this is sort of the result. You're getting Rollins as part of, as a referee, you get to piggyback off of this match into whatever's going on with Rollins afterwards. So overall, I think they handled it pretty well.
Yeah, like you could argue like this feels like the biggest match at SummerSlam.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, maybe the most long built, the longest built, would you say?
Yeah, like if you're tracing this back to like that night after the Rumble and I prayed for this to happen to you. I mean, they've kept it hot this whole period.
Just Punk coming back for a match. Like this is his first singles match.
First televised. Like he did that run of he did some house shows, but yeah, like this is pretty much like the first singles match you've seen in this return. So
I hope he kind of plays it safe, man. Like
I'm sure everyone is hoping for that. But this is, I mean, you have to do a pretty big match here with this. Like this is going to be
man, be careful of every single step, CM Punk. You know they waited a long time for this.
No crowd surfing.
No.
No springboards. Judgment Day is in the back, and they have split up into teams to look for Jay, and then Dom is left alone, and he runs into Liv Morgan, and she is assuring him everything's going to be okay when Finn comes back and says, Dom, what are you doing with her? And sends Dominic away from Liv. So again, we get more of Finn Balor, and it just happens to be caught in the middle of all of this.
The Balor involvement, exactly, like is probably the standout fact of all of this. You know, he's the one to lead Dominic into the specific direction. He's the one to catch Dom with Liv Morgan so that he could report back to the Judgment Day, which will of course come to bite Dom in the ass. So they're pointing a lot of fingers at Finn Balor with this episode.
Kathy Kelly interviewed Sami Zayn, and he said that Braun and Ilya went to war for a chance at this title. The word is not concerned that he is with Braun, but I'm taking it seriously, and he better not make the same mistake he did at Money in the Bank and take me lightly because I will be bringing 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hears a commotion, and it's Carlito and JD who have attacked Jey Uso, and Zayn comes to the rescue, saving his former Bloodline stablemate. And that will set up our main event for the show with Zayn and Jey Uso teaming up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They showed Otis and Braun Strowman at Lambeau Field earlier in the day. And that takes us to Xavier Woods, Otis, and Akira Tozawa against Karrion Kross and AOP that we have had all week to await. And boy, Otis was a god here in his home state of Wisconsin. This guy got like... You could argue this guy got the biggest reaction on the show. They went nuts for this guy. They're chanting for him. When he finally is tagged in, they erupt. He rips off his shirt, and we go to commercial, comes back, and Otis is just running wild on Razor, hits the caterpillar, and then Tozawa goes for a crossbody to AOP on the floor. Woods is in there, and the legal man with Cross, when Cross catches Woods with the final prayer, is basically an F5, and he pins Woods in 8 minutes and 36 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The final prayer.
It's really good to see that. I mean, it feels like it's been a few weeks of like inactivity, at least for Otis. I mean, you know, at least like not coming out and having a significant segment with Chad Gable. But it was good to see, at least with this crowd, that I don't think that layoff has hurt him at all. I hope this sort of reaction carries on with other crowds. I hope he's even on TV in the next few weeks.
Yes, I'm just watching this graphic and like, I'd love to be in the head of Paul Ellering. he's just like an accessory here in the back. I mean, it's they really got to squeeze him into the graphic.
Is he doing house shows?
They're not doing house shows.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Well, so,
I mean, the like house shows are pretty few and far between.
Interesting. Yeah.
Chad Gable comes out, and Woods is just taken off. He's done for the night. And they come out with the Creeds. He's pelted with "You Suck" chants. And Gable mocks the idea of Otis being a leader and notes how you guys just lost with Xavier Woods and you need to lead with your mind. But I know Otis's brain isn't his strong point. That's why I recruited the Creeds. And he invites these morons, by his description, to come back and join them because the Wyatt Six are after everyone on the roster, including you. And Otis says how, Gable, you ran and abandoned the Creeds last week, and he turns them down again. So he sets the Creeds to attack Tozawa and Otis. And Otis fires back, clotheslines both, and as he has Gable up for the World's Strongest Slam, the Creeds attack and run him into the post, shoulder first, when the lights go out. And my highlight here, where Julius and Brutus on the floor, wielding chairs, and Brutus just screams, "Come on, sons of bitches!" He was ready. He was ready to attack.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, this is Bloodsport warm-up.
That's right. That's right. These guys are on the show, too. Mm-hmm. So the Wyatts walk out, but it's a distraction because Bo Dallas, Uncle Howdy, appears behind Chad Gable with the mask on and delivers Sister Abigail, and we cut to break.
Yeah. Yeah, and there we go.
Simple segment, but the crowd, again, when those lights go out, the crowds go nuts for them, and this was a simple segment.
Yeah, up that until works. This point, they've managed to, like, I think there are always going to be a lot of questions whenever they re-debuted the Wyatts without Bray Wyatt. We could say now, like, a month in, they've managed to successfully keep this storyline hot. You can argue this crowd is hotter now than they were upon debut. And I guess they pivoted them to a babyface act if they weren't already before. And we're getting more and more closer to seeing what this group is going to look like in ring. Here, you got to see, I guess,
Bo Dallas. We know the opponents, too, the way that set this up.
Yes, and we got to see Bo Dallas in his in-ring attire, which looks to be brown, black pants and like a, you know, black shirt.
The waiting weekend attire.
Yeah. Similar to, I think, how The Fiend looked. Is that right? Like the type of tights? Anyway, it continues to maybe tell us that, like, they're probably going to continue wrestling like they're regular people, but just they happen to be wearing these masks. Mm-hmm. So, which I think is a decent way of doing it. I'm curious to see if they keep the lights low for their matches or if they go away with that. I think that was obviously like pretty poorly received overall anytime they tried it with Bray. So I continue to be interested. They continue to get great reactions just upon entrance alone. So, yeah.
I think they should do the first match. I think they should do it as a TV match. I think
so, like, too.
There's the curiosity, and I would certainly build it up for like at least a week for a TV coming.
Yeah,
up.
This is all really working out pretty well. Like at first I thought it would be a really awkward fit trying to fit the Wyatts with like the tone of a Gable and Otis type of segment, but they're essentially using sort of the Wyatts.
They're not pretending they're monsters. Like they're no. These are tortured individuals that now have these like these masks, but it's like they're humans that have been through their
essentially we are building to a squash match for the Wyatts against the Creeds and Gable, and I feel bad for the Creeds in that scenario as a first match, but as a way to just kind of punish Gable and like for doing wrong by Otis and Tozawa and Maxine. I think the Wyatts are an effective device, and then hopefully the Wyatts can move on to a more serious opponent after this.
What if that's how they ended Bloodsport, where it's like they end this match, Julius headlines, and then the lights go out at the end of Bloodsport, and you hear the piano?
Sure. And then maybe you hear Metallica come on, and Nick Gage comes out to oppose the Wyatt family. Maybe they'll join the Wyatt family.
Nick Gage as a member of the Wyatts would be something to
natural.
I think so.
His interview, his VHS tape, I think I would love to see.
Fuck digital. Everything on tapes.
Well, he's a big attraction on Cameo, so I don't know if he's all
about
tapes.
He'd be, God, that's something to explore in this crossover. Bronson Reed against Pete Dunne. doesn't get started because before the match begins, Sheamus attacks Dunn, then fights Reed, and he hits the 10 beats onto Dunn, and a brogue kick is avoided when Dunn rolls out, so he just hits poor Bronson was just collateral damage in the midst of the segment, but we got a bigger arrival here in WWE in 2024. It was blue jeans wearing Sheamus.
Well, this is Sheamus in street attire.
Oh, leisure. When have we seen this man in, like, leisure jeans here?
You're right. Like, I'm used to, at this point, I'm used to seeing him in the Brawling Brutes hat, like the sort of Tiny Tim getup.
You know, like this guy was just screaming like your neighbor on like a Saturday morning working on his garden vibes, okay? Like his fresh new Mark's Work Warehouse attire here. Like, look at this guy.
Yeah. What are you doing on my property? Get off, little boy.
Come on, sons of bitches. He had such a dad vibe here. Sheamus. All right.
Well, dad Sheamus. Yeah. Okay.
Judgment Day is recovering in the clubhouse when Rhea asks, what the hell happened? And Balor is sick of being disrespected. They're going to take on Zayn and Jey Uso tonight. And because he called us a joke, he's taking on Gunther next week. And Rhea says no one was supposed to touch Jay. Why is Sammy involved now? And then she asks, where was Dominic during all of this? And Carlito goes, ask Liv. Excuse me? And she grabs Dominic like he's going to the principal's office. Instead, he is being forced out to the ring for a crossover segment. And he is forced down the into the ring. And Dom is in the ring when Liv pops up in the crowd. And Liv states she has self-control and she can wait to get her hands on Rhea until SummerSlam, but says she has feelings for Dominic and knows Dominic has feelings for her. And Rhea, gorgeous men like Dominic don't go for girls like you. They go for girls like me. And this child in the bottom was very up close to Liv and her extremely short shorts here.
Well, memory is to last for a lifetime, I'm sure.
Well, he's in shock here. He's like covering his mouth. Dominic stops Rhea from going after her and says, I will take care of this. And then we get a split screen. Okay. Yeah. This felt like some reveal we were getting on Jerry Springer when Liv is asking Dominic, I know you want to say those three words to me. Dominic says, you want me to say those three words? I hate you, Liv.
Yeah, and also, are you stupid? Are you deaf?
That's we got really a lot more than three words
nine
here.
Nine words here.
Yeah. I can't stand you. You've ruined everything. And then he starts screaming in Spanish, so you know he's upset. And Liv starts crying. And then Liv turns away, leaves in tears. And then Rhea and Dominic enter the next stage of their relationship because she licks him.
Is that the sign of moving on? Is that like...
in Lucha Underground, this was Katrina's mark of death. So I think this is actually a signal of bad things are coming.
I mean, you could be
look
right,
out. Mil actually. Muertes has his eyes on Dirty Dom.
You could be right. Yeah, it's very interesting to see how they're playing this entire storyline. And you do really coming out of this, like, get the sense that things are going to come to a head, probably at SummerSlam, if not shortly afterwards. I would say, like, you know, given maybe Liv's what feels like intentionally bad acting here, it feels like they are trying to tell you that Liv is faking this heartbreak and that Dom is also acting here to trick Rhea. So you
have the question now of, like, is Dominic going to end up with Liv? Is Balor going to end up with Liv?
And I think you also have a question of who exactly is doing the manipulation here. Is it Liv and Dom manipulating Rhea, or is Rhea pulling all the strings here and somehow tricking Dom? Who's going to turn on the other first is essentially, I think, what the guessing game here. I do think it'll, like, make Rhea look kind of stupid, you know, for if they just, I don't know, have Dominic turn on her as if, like, she didn't see it coming. I think her as a character is presented as a lot more smarter than that. So I'd love to see how they handle that. At the same time, it would give her a lot of sympathy, you know, if, like, somehow, like, she gets broken up with after being incredibly loyal to Dominic Mysterio. There are a lot of ways that they could play it, and I think it's very likely we'll see it play out at SummerSlam or on the Raw afterwards.
Zelina Vega comes out, and oh, so we also had a backstage segment here where Jackie interviewed Sheamus and asked, what's going on with Pete Dunne? And he doesn't know what the issue is, but it can easily be fixed over some pints, or we can sort it out like proper fellas and take it to the ring and find out who the real Bruiserweight is. So, Dad's going to, he's willing to throw hands with the son.
Or take him out for a pint.
Either one.
Maybe. Yes. What if Pete Dunne says, yeah, let's go for a pint. No match.
Fair play. Then
I am looking forward to Pete Dunne's explanation. They're really kind of dangling that, you know? And I think Pete Dunne, I just wanted him to say, like, you let me bark like a dog. You let me act like a dog for like 5 months. How could you? You didn't let me change my name back. You called me Butch.
I'm not a dog.
Is that supposed to be a John Tenta?
I keep going back to a John Tenta with this Pete Dunne character. Let's be honest, okay? After all these months, was Butch not more entertaining than
For you and
this
I,
Pete
yeah,
Dunne?
Greatly, yeah. For the man's career, I'm not so sure.
Like, this guy is like Pete Dunne. He doesn't even get to talk. He doesn't get to do anything. He's just like,
it's true.
He's a great wrestler. That's great.
You could definitely say Butch had a better run than Pete Dunne on the main roster. Yes.
Zelina Vega is out, and she is selling the stomp onto her elbow from last week with a wrapped up arm with like a tensor bandage, which will be important to note. And Kathy Kelly interviews her, and Zelina says, I'm a real Boricua and an injury won't stop me. So she is coming out. Zoe tries to go after the injured arm, but Vega gets it out of the way. She's got to fight back with left-handed punches, which was a little tough to pull off. She manages a tornado DDT and then goes for a top rope moonsault and kind of like lands on the knees, but gets a two count from that. Sets her up for the 619 when Sonya distracts and Baszler trips Vega. So Katana Chance, Caden Carter, and Lyra all run down to attack them. And Vega avoids a powerbomb by nailing her with her taped up elbow.
There must have been a cast in there. I don't think it's just tape.
Well, we saw a pretty solid close-up. This was not a plaster.
No, but I mean, you could have a metal plate in there, like a splint.
Perhaps we will give the benefit of the doubt.
Otherwise, this would make no sense. Tape wouldn't do any sort of damage.
Well, I felt that the visual of it made it look kind of awkward.
I mean, I think there are a variety of casts, you know, a variety of ways to heal an arm. It doesn't just have to be plaster.
Okay, well, maybe she's got some illegal plate in there and nails her in the head, hits her a second time, and wins with the code red in 8 minutes and 50 seconds, sending Zoe Stark into the losing column.
When you're, you know, judging by the crowd reaction, I thought this was certainly a successful match. They got a strong reaction from this crowd, which is a huge accomplishment for a mid-card women's match in the third hour, okay? Like, I feel, I don't know, it's just kind of a standard for, like, those sort of matches to get very little reception. But this, like, did well. And I would say they've done a great job of giving Zelina Vega consistent airtime and consistent microphone time, going as far as to just give her a promo en route to having a match here. It suggests to me that they see something special in her by continuing to give her these opportunities and now giving her a Bob Orton, you know, arm gimmick. I think
that should be her character going forward.
She should be Bob
Cowboy
Orton.
Zelina Vega.
Sure. I think it's a great babyface move for the LWO. Let's remember, everybody, the gimmick behind, like, Eddie's main gimmick as a babyface is lie, cheat, and steal. And that's something we've never seen the LWO even entertain. They almost, up until this point, feel like a rather clean-cut, kind of boring babyface group, if I have to be honest. So Zelina doing this gives her a little bit of edge and certainly a bit more of an identifiable trait, which is sorely needed for, you know, this entire division.
Adam Pearce is with Xavier Woods. He needs to have a match with Karrion Kross on Sci-Fi next week, and I have to do it by myself. And Adam Pearce says, okay, you've got 6 minutes.
Yeah, this feud is like, it's not hot at all.
When is the final chapter of this match, of this program?
Yeah, ask the authors. Yeah, dude, I don't know, man. Like, short of, like, I think Big E coming back and playing some sort of role, I just don't see this Woods and Final Testament thing. I guess, like, Woods can turn heel. That's sort of what they've been teasing this whole time. But it just feels so, like, irrelevant, you know?
Drew walks up and asks Pierce about not being told ahead of time about Seth Rollins as the referee. He talks about their history together, and Pierce explains that next week Rollins will give you your instructions for the match. That's our setup for Monday.
Maybe the instructions are really special. You know, maybe it'll take like 15 minutes to tell them all.
Maybe it's like that UFC when they got the in Detroit when Ken Shamrock fought Dan Severn, and the day of they had to change up the rules, and technically they weren't allowed closed fist punches. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's that.
Jackie Redmond is with Isla Dawn and Elba Fire on Raw. So let's rewind, okay? Because I feel like this segment, they're treating me like I don't watch SmackDown. They came out on SmackDown and said, next week you'll get a glimpse of these tag titles. So we got a glimpse of them tonight on Raw.
I think that they meant SmackDown.
Okay, well, we will get a glimpse, because then Jackie explains that on Friday, you're going to address the recent challenge issued by Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. Yeah. I heard them address this challenge on Friday, where they said not likely.
They said you'll get a glimpse, and they don't know. Maybe they might give them a title shot.
So they might change their minds, and by Friday, okay, it's on. We will face you.
Yeah, gotcha. Essentially it was to promote like a talking segment for these two with Jade and Bianca likely interrupting. Kind of awkwardly presented, yeah.
Okay. So Baszler, Stark, and DeVille walk up. This is news to me, and I do watch Raw every week. They have been running this division on Raw.
I mean, they're the dominant heel presence, I suppose. Yeah.
They are the only heel presence.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So therefore, by default, they've been running it. Yeah.
And the baby faces are Katana Chance and Caden Carter?
In Zelina, yeah.
Okay. So they point out, the champions point out, wait a minute, you just lost like 5 minutes ago. You're not running anything. And says that Sonya warns, we are a bigger problem for you than Jade and Belair, and we will take your titles. And Isla Dawn responds, well, you can try. And DeVille says, no, this is factual. We will take those titles.
She's very confident. I mean, that's what you
this
want.
This is not an opinion, okay? This is matter of fact.
If this was a job interview, I think she would, make it to my top three candidates, okay? That's the type of confidence you want.
So some, like, Obi-Wan stuff from Sonya.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, this tag division to me is just, it's in the doldrums. I will keep an open mind, but I feel it's very satisfying.
You're not wrong, and they haven't done a great job of making this heel group of Sonya, Zoe and Shayna feel all that threatening. I think they need a name, okay, first of all, so get like make it so that I don't have to type Shayna, Zoe and
the DeVille, you know.
Sure,
the DeVille's in the details,
the DeVille's rejects. Sorry. Whatever, give me something, all right, just to kind of like show me that this is a unit, all right. They've done a terrible job with Dawn and Fire by giving them any sort of identity. This is, I feel, is the first time I've seen them in two consistent television shows. It's going to be three by Friday, which is massive for them, but they're not over at all, so they definitely have a lot of work to do, but it's at least consistent, we can say, at least for the DeVille's rejects.
Stark Industries.
You can keep going, yeah. The whole show.
Okay, this is way more compelling than this segment was. Michael Cole reminds us again that next week the final Raw before SummerSlam and the Raw after SummerSlam will be on Sci-Fi. Pat McAfee's response, dream come true. This is it, I've made
funny.
It. ESPN, Indianapolis Colts. Sci-fi for 2 weeks. That's his response. Dream come true.
The boyhood dream has come true.
Going to be on Sci-Fi. Half the audience will be watching that. Saw the show this week. Then we got another Gunther talk, and he's in front of the big screen. Fragile egos that have shattered their reputations with this title. WWE desperately needed me. The championship needs me to create a new mountaintop. And he goes over the title reigns of Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, and Damian Priest. I look at the cast of challengers and it becomes truly disgusting. And he detests fans that sing along with Seth Rollins, don't we all? And he will bring this championship to a level that no title has reached before. Damian Priest will fail.
Yeah.
These are simple, but I continue to enjoy these.
They make him look so great. They like his confidence, you know, really comes through, and not just in the Sonya Deville type of way. And they're laying the foundation here for the Seth Rollins feud coming out of this. So it almost seems to guarantee that Gunther's winning. If not now, then very shortly.
Imagine this company like didn't care about what they're about, you know, the third rail of politics, and you just had Gunther just bury Hulk Hogan here as like a paper champion back in the day, and now this goof is off ripping his shirt like he's everybody's you know, mascot for conventions.
You think Gunther should speak at the DNC?
I don't know if
we don't know his politics.
Really. Yeah, I mean, there was 1 year they had Dwayne Johnson speak at both, so they kind of missed their opportunity. He could have been their representative at each.
Do you think they acknowledge, like, do you think we get a Hogan appearance anytime soon, just given how close I think, well,
Are you asking, do you think they would shy away from a Hogan appearance because of
yes.
it?
Yes.
No, I don't think so. He's doing an appearance for them next month at that Fanatics thing, but that's not a TV thing. That's that big autograph thing. I don't think it's going to deter them from utilizing a Hulk Hogan. I don't think, like, obviously, like, think of all the times that you see mainstream appearances and they show it. Like, they were not going to show any highlights of Hogan on Raw tonight at the RNC, even though like he was all over that thing and tons of attention on it. I just for whatever reason, it's such a different perspective they have versus the UFC when it comes to embedding themselves in politics. And that's whether you like, some people will applaud WWE for the fact that they have not injected themselves into that discourse, because I'm sure like the thinking is that you're going to upset enough people with whatever you do. And showing Hogan tonight speaking at the RNC would have pissed off a segment of wrestling fans.
Yeah, I think at this point, like, we can say like the brand kind of have their political leanings, in that WWE aims to be apolitical so that they can cast as wide of a net as possible for potential customers, whereas UFC has deliberately leaned into one side so that they can have mass appeal to that entire side of customers, and both of them are probably very profitable for the both of them.
Zayn and Jey Uso go through a sea of fans, and this is very smart. They are now selling foam hands for the Yeet hands, and both put these on and do their handshake before making their way out into the arena. So very, very, very cool entrance here with the two of them together.
The Yeet hands, and you have to buy two of them? Is that right?
Yeah. Do you want to quickly pull up and see how much do you think one hand is going for?
Oh, okay. Let me see.
Let's guess. I'm going to go 25 a hand.
25 a hand?
Okay, I might be too generous.
I want to say, so you have to buy them as a set?
That's a good quote. Okay, you know, if they come as a set, then they're no less than 30. There's no way.
Well, I'm trying to pull it up right now, and it says search did not match any products. Give me 1 second here.
We've never seen these before, have we? Like, these are the first time I recall seeing these.
I don't know.
So they may have only been introduced.
To be honest. What's strange is, like, I'm trying to pull them up here on the Canadian version of the shop, and they're not pulling up, even though, like, on the Google search, it's cached. Oh. So, like, it does come up. So I don't know if it's just maybe they're sold out. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Well, it's a very smart.
I'll tell you, Google, just by looking at this, seems to indicate $20.99 Canadian.
$20.99.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's for, I'm assuming that's for one.
You're not getting two hands for $20.99. No way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, next week on the show, St. Paul, Minnesota, we get the referee's instructions delivered from Seth Rollins. Lyra Valkyrie.
Is that a good value in your opinion? $21 Canadian hand.
You're buying foam. Let me ask you this: what is your usage of this outside of your one night that you buy this at a wrestling show? Like, what in your everyday life are you?
Is that how you determine the value of an item?
I mean, you're paying for something for a one-use-only experience.
And for a lot of people, that's any foam hand. Where the hell are you going to use any foam hand in real life?
Okay, well, I don't have any foam hand, so I can't. You know, I never got a foam hand, and it did leave me with a bit of FOMO.
Very good.
But I'm tired.
You don't really seem like the foam hand type.
John. No? You don't think I
no,
would?
No, I don't see you at a Leafs game buying a Maple Leafs foam hand.
Well, if they offered a Bruins one, maybe I'd have to. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. Oh, yeah, the rest of Raw next week. Gunther and Balor. That should be fun. Woods against Cross. And then the sixth woman is Deville, Stark, and Baszler. Stark Industries against Caden Carter, Katana Chance, and Lyra Valkyria. Balor and JD against, with Dominic and Carlito in the corner against Sami Zayn and Jey Uso. Non-title match with the tag champions in this one. Early on, Zayn hits an Arabian press to both on the floor, and then Zayn goes after Dominic. So the ref intervenes, allowing Carlito to post Zayn, and that sets up the break. They have the heat on Sami Zayn and build up to Jey getting the hot tag. Balor stops a spear with a kick, and then they trap Jey in their corner, and Balor is met with a super kick coming off the turnbuckle. Zayn and JD come in, and as he sets up for the Huluva kick, Carlito distracts the referee. Dominic grabs Sami Zayn's leg, and that leads to JD hitting a standing Spanish fly onto Zayn for a big two count. The babyfaces come back, and we see the 1D by Jey and Sami Zayn. Balor is in to save his partner, and after the shotgun dropkick is stopped by a super kick, Jey nails Carlito and Dominic on the apron. JD then snaps Jay's throat on the rope, and the coup de grace connects. JD goes for a top rope moonsault, lands it on Jey, and Sami dives in for a save. And as we're ticking down in the time left in the show, Zayn sends Balor to the floor. Huluva kick is executed to JD, and Zayn dives onto Balor on the floor, leading to Jey Uso's Uso splash, pinning JD in 16 minutes and 25 seconds, and they put it over strong that they have pinned the tag team champions, perhaps a destination post-SummerSlam. And in the closing seconds, as Sami Zayn is celebrating, he turns around in the ring, and there is Breakensteiner himself breaking Sami Zayn with a spear to end the show. I thought a very nice match, and I like the addition of Braun in the closing seconds.
Yeah, this is they're certainly paving the way for Jey Uso and Sami Zayn challenge against JD and Finn Balor after SummerSlam. But at the same time, they have to remind you, hey, this is still the he's got a IC title defense against Braun Breaker coming up. So let's tie that in. I'm really glad to see that we're seeing Sami and Jey become a thing right now, because I don't think these two have actually had a run as a tag team before. We've had Sami and KO, of course. We've had Cody and Jey. But they've kind of largely kept, you know, Sami and Jey apart from each other, at least when it comes to in-ring activity. And they have so much backstory, so much like history together, and that's really been untapped so far. The chemistry is still there. Both of them are so much more over now than they were back when they were in the Bloodline. So I'm really looking forward to seeing these two actually have a run. Now, it would be a bit of a downgrade, I think, for Sami to, like, having finished an IC title reign, to just go back to the tag division.
But what this opens the door for is, like, we talk about this ultimate showdown with your two bloodlines. Mm. Now you've injected,
yes,
like, Sami is an obvious pick to be part of the original Bloodline team, and this tandem leads the way for that.
Like, 100%.
If you're looking at a War Games, I think this makes all the sense in the world that you establish this this union between Jey and Sami now, and it's an easy segue come whenever you want to pull that trigger.
The magnets are slowly reforming, and we're getting two of the pieces that have already joined. Maybe we get Jimmy after this, and then maybe the big dog soon to come. So very exciting. I'm loving the way that they're doing all of this. Unfortunately, I think it means Sami drops the IC title to Braun Breaker, who I think is a very suitable person to take the belt from him on a stage like SummerSlam. It's all coming together really well. I think they're handling, you know, the main stories of the show very well heading to SummerSlam.
So here's the update for SummerSlam. We're up to 7 matches. Damian Priest against Gunther, Bayley against Nia Jax, Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley, Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa, Logan Paul against LA Knight, Sami Zayn against Braun Breaker, and CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre with Seth Rollins as the guest referee. So that's 7 singles matches and 6 title matches of the 7. And I could see this being what they cap the show at. I mean, maybe you squeeze one more match in here, but if it comes to like a DIY tag title defense or Jade and Belair challenging for the tag titles, those seem more slotted for a SmackDown the night prior than on here. I mean, you could throw in the women's tag onto this, but
we can also maybe expect something for the kickoff if they really wanted to put something in there. But just for reference, I was curious about this. Last year, we had 9 matches on SummerSlam.
I look at this card. This looks like a 5-hour WWE show based on 7 matches, knowing their pacing.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you know, a lot of angles will be there. I think there's, to me, at least, I have a pretty high expectation that we might see Roman Reigns, you know, at the end of this of the night.
And we got that Jelly Roll performance too in the somewhere in here.
Oh yes, yeah. We're gonna get to see that live.
First time seeing
Jelly Roll.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, yeah,
so maybe they could still add some matches to this.
It's possible, yes. Yeah. And you also have the earlier start time as well. They do have some flexibility of what they can. Can go with, but it's shaping up really well. Like, this has been a pretty well built SummerSlam, and like I would argue, I think Punk and Drew feels like a really, really big match for next weekend or 2 weekends from now.
Yeah.
All right. Let us go on over. If you want to send in a super chat, you're welcome to do so, and we'll also take some feedback from forum.postwrestling.com.
We have a couple of super chats here pretty early on in the show, so thank you guys for being very patient so that we can get to your super chats right about now, as soon as we're done the review. First one comes to us from Jake from the Windy City, who sends $10. Thank you, as always, for the support, Jake. He says, many people enjoy the NBA on TNT for Shaq, Charles Barkley, and Kenny Smith, way more than the games itself. That team and their chemistry is so important to their portfolio. Have either of you seen it?
Yes. I mean, this is like the top studio show in sports, and this is like a big part of the TNT package. That, I mean, it still remains to be seen, regardless of, you know, those, like Charles Barkley has said that after next season he's done, he's retiring, but we will see. They could certainly command. I mean, this is a very interesting part in the whole TNT package. If they could leverage this elsewhere, or if they just sunset the show, but yeah, that's a big part of it. And it's an excellent studio show. I mean, it's a huge part of, I think, the reason that TNT has been so entrenched with like NBA fans is because of the studio show that they've been doing.
Thank you, Jake. We got a Legend Riser who sends $5. Thank you for that. And also thanks for the subscription. He says, if you recontextualize the one backstage segment is Dominic being upset at Liv for almost exposing their affair, it paints a completely different picture. Okay, interesting. So the scene where Dominic runs into Liv backstage, and, you know, Dominic is shouting at Liv about, like, why are you back here? And Legend Rider is suggesting that that's why Dominic was upset at Liv for exposing them. You could. I don't know if that was the intent.
Because they ran into each other backstage?
Yeah.
They've been running into each other for 6 months.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Let's say Dominic runs into Liv backstage and they are in cahoots. Would Dominic have that reaction? Would Dominic have, like, knowing that none
this
of the.
This is the invisible
members,
camera, right? Like, we're supposed to pretend like
knowing
no
that
one can see them.
None of the other Judgment Day members are there, so there's no need for Dominic to really act. Why would Dominic react as if he's angry that Liv happened to be there?
Things that will probably not be sewn up and explained at the end of it all.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. This is like certainly some of the most I've actually had to think about one of these backstage segments, which typically don't have a ton of thought put into them. And maybe we're thinking too much about it. Maybe we're not supposed to think that deeply about it. I'm not sure. But
I mean, if Rhea was watching all of these segments for all of these months, she would know that Dominic feels very uncomfortable around this woman.
Right.
He's done nothing. He has never done one thing on this show that has led you to believe he is cheating on Rhea.
Yes.
On camera. Correct.
Except, like, you'd be suspicious of them, like, leaving the same room together, as we kind of saw in the teases of this entire storyline. You know, as like in the backstage Easter eggy type of days.
Right. Where they were talking in the background.
Yeah. But that's still not enough to suggest anything. Like, you know, so there are a number of ways they could present this. It could be that Dominic has been telling the truth this entire time and he's just simply getting played by. Well, we know he's getting played by Liv somehow. Right.
Right. Even if they are proven to be there together, it's that Liv is pulling the strings,
manipulating.
Here.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, let us continue, and we will go to Manny from Pacoima. The build to Gunther and Damian Priest once again delivered. They've done a good job at presenting Priest as the babyface. I'd be fine with either competitor coming out as champion. With the miscommunication between Lyra and Sonya, in which Lyra was yelling at Sonya to let go of her while she was in the gut wrench, I wonder what Sonya thought, what move Lyra was going to do. For those wondering what Dom told in Spanish, he threw a few curse words out, told her that he didn't understand what was going through her head, and finished it off by telling her he hated her with all of his life. Looking forward to Bloodsport this Sunday. And Aris and Galeno Del Mal had a nice match at GCW's Don't Tell Me What to Do. I also recommend checking out Bron Breakker's digital exclusive promos, especially the one that he cut last week.
Thanks for that recommendation. Cool. Very cool. All right, let's go to Crooked Letter Muggin, who says, Punk hates Drew, Drew hates Punk, Seth hates them both. What could go wrong? A smart move to have Seth as a special guest referee, as he shows us a graphic of SummerSlam's Taker versus Bret Hart match with Shawn Michaels as the special ref. Heart and soul. All right, who's going to make the first mistake? Dom finally grew a pair and sent Liv packing. I'm not buying it with Liv's crocodile tears. Judgment Day been acting real sus, and I bet the gut punch will hit hard. It came off too easy seeing Dom stand his guard. Gunther and Priest became musty in 2 weeks flat. Braun and Ilya are becoming wrestling soulmates at this rate. Can Ilya get a win, please? Sammy and Jay have as much chemistry as Jay does with Jimmy. Could be a sign of Sammy's new direction once he loses the IC title. Solid fun all around. Next week is going to make up for what COVID stole from me, which I guess is Finn Balor versus Gunther. That was supposed to happen during COVID, really. I forget.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So you get it next week on Sci-Fi.
Dream
come busting
true.
Out everything. It's a dream come true. Yeah. Brian from New Jersey sounded like a hot crowd in Green Bay. They certainly had some reasons to keep the energy up between the Dom, Liv, Rhea drama and Punk Drew Rollins. Priest and Gunther throwing hands and Bo Dallas hitting his brother's move. Dom is absolutely positively going to screw over Rhea and hook up with Liv next weekend, though. Dom is forever the sub. Felt the in-ring high points are Breaker and Dragunov and the main event, even with the tag champs losing. Also, there was an ad for Dynamite Blood and Guts during Raw in the U.S.
Interesting. We got Annie who says, I really enjoyed this episode of Raw. This is the show with the best storylines going at the moment. They've even managed to give the Wyatts pathos and have granted them as alter egos akin to what Cactus Jack and the Great Muta were to Foley and Muta, respectively. That's an interesting way of considering it. Where are you guys on the builds to the Raw matches? I think just about all of them have been successful and have significantly increased my interest in matches that wouldn't interest me without the storylines. SummerSlam feels like a hot show. Punk and Drew is the best built match since Cody's Chase. Rollins' involvement has been deftly woven in. Just like with Mania, I feel excited for the big show after Raw, and I feel like giving up on wrestling after SmackDown. Okay. I think they've been great overall. So that would be Priest and Gunther, which they've done an exceptional job with. Certainly heightened my expectations from what it was when this match was announced.
Liv and Rhea's been, you know, excellent. It's like the obvious direction that they were going as soon as Rhea was ready to come back. And then you have Zayn and Braun. Like, I don't think it's like this big program that's going on. It feels more of a
a great job with Braun. And this feels like it's his crowning, and I think for that reason it feels like it's a big deal.
Yeah, and yeah. As I've mentioned, I think Punk and Drew's been built excellent.
But in both cases with Rhea Ripley and CM Punk, they've somehow managed to make them hotter characters despite their injuries and absences. So I think that's a lot of credit to the team.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you, everybody, as always, for joining us here. We are live after Raw, after Dynamite, and after SmackDown each and every week. Tuesday night, Braden and Davey are with you after NXT and the sit-down interview with Thea Hale that they will be discussing, along with Eddie Thorpe versus Lexus King. And then Wednesday, we will have Pollock and Thurston live here on the Post Wrestling and WrestleNomics YouTube channels at 3 Eastern Time. And then Wednesday night, it's a special guest that I will be having in this seat. Andrew Thompson joins me as Wei Ting is going to be getting into his finest Sheamus jeans, and he is going to be off on a well-deserved break from life, from the city. So you have a great time, Wei, and I guess we'll be circling back and checking in with Wei on Friday night.
Well, I'll be on Thursday, actually, with our friends at MC later talking about Deadpool. So I'll make the trip back just to do that review. Deadpool
just for WH.
That's it. And of course, John's going to be having a really busy week because he's also up with Eric Marcotte on Thursday talking about the G1 3 and 4 exclusively in the Post Wrestling Cafe. And then look at this weekend. If you're a Post Wrestling Cafe member, you are getting your value alone this weekend. We got the G1 review with John and Eric on Thursday. We got MCU later with me, Rich, and WH on Thursday. Friday, John and I talking about SmackDown, okay? And then Saturday, Kate from Montreal and John Cena on Collision Course. And on Sunday, it is Kate and Karen Peterson talking about the G1 days 5 and 6. Show every single day, Thursday to Sunday this weekend.
Yes. And one final thing is Saturday, a new Postmarks will be out with Bruce that Lord too. And David Myers.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All right, all of that can be found at postwrestling.com. As always, we thank you very much for all of your support of all things post-wrestling, and we'll speak with you many, many times later this week.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.